From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
Coming up on the program will be Jack Elsey, the CEO of the Michigan Educator Workforce Initiative, and he'll be joined by Dr. Monica McLeod from the Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences. We'll also chat with Kyle Luft from the Michigan Connections Academy and Teresa Woods from the Lighthouse Connections Academy. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is the Chief Executive Officer of Michigan Educator Workforce Initiative, Jack Elsey. And joining Jack is Dr. Monica McLeod, the Chief Academic Officer for the Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us, Bob.
Thanks for having us.
So, Jack, I appreciate you coming back to School Talks and sharing with us what I think is a really neat approach around team teaching and a model that you're supporting through the Workforce Initiative. And I'm hoping you could share with our listeners what motivations and research led the educator workforce to pursue team teaching, I guess, as a statewide strategy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us about it.
Well, we know that we've had a teacher shortage, not just in Michigan, but nationally. But it's certainly shown up here pretty substantially in the last 10 years here in Michigan. And certainly one part of addressing that challenge is recruiting more teachers. But that can't be the only solution. The other solution is retaining the great educators we have right now in classrooms all across Michigan. And so if we're going to do a better job of retaining those teachers, we have to think about what are ways in which we innovate the profession itself. How do we change the profession to make it more enjoyable, more effective, right, for teachers all across the state? And when we looked at different ways of doing that, we discovered the Next Education Workforce organization that's housed at Arizona State University, and their early results in Arizona were really strong. Teachers were staying longer, they were happier on the job, and student achievement was increasing, most importantly. So that made it a pretty obvious choice for us to pursue.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a sense of what the, I guess we would say, the structural differences are between a team teaching environment and the sort of single teacher classroom?
Sure. So the traditional classroom that most of us probably attended through our K through 12 experience, particularly in elementary school, say, was probably a class of 25 to 30 kids and one teacher for the whole day, except maybe going to gym class or art class, right? You were with one teacher for the majority of the day. In the team teaching environment, rather than having one teacher for 25 or 30 kids, you might have four teachers for 120 students, which means that students can be grouped dynamically throughout the day depending on what they need. So you might have a morning block with a particular teacher in a small group if you need extra help with reading. You might go to a different teacher in the afternoon if you need extra help with math. Because here's the thing, in any fourth grade in any school in the country, say there are three or four fourth grade teachers, one of those teachers might be the best at teaching reading. Why would we not have that teacher have more reading with more students in that school setting so that more students get the best teaching available to them in that school?
You know, your point about taking relatively the same number of students and using them differently with the staff makes me appreciate our education system in America is largely driven out of a manufacturing process. You know, you educate kids based on their date of manufacture. There's bells, there's clocks, and it's very structured, which sort of mimics that whole manufacturing assembly line. And the idea of taking the same number of students and using them in different capacities with different strengths makes a lot of sense. In what ways have you found the team teaching model helps address things like burnout and teacher retention, as you mentioned?
Well, as you said, I mean, you cited the sort of factory model of schools, and we know teachers aren't robots, right? They're human beings. They love kids. That's probably why they got in the profession. They wanted to help kids out. And so they also like collaborating with other adults. They want to be in community as they educate our youth. And so I was chatting with the story maybe to best that is most emblematic of what the impact could be is I was actually talking to one of Dr. McLeod's teachers who said she had a student in her class prior to adopting team teaching who she could tell the minute he walked into the classroom if he was having a bad morning. You know, he had the hangdog look on his face, clearly frustrated about something. He'd had a bad morning. She also knew that she probably wasn't the best adult for him to help solve his problems. For whatever reason, as in any relationship between human beings, she wasn't going to be the person that was likely going to solve his problem. And what was fascinating about this conversation, Bob, was what she shared with me was not only did it feel problematic for her that she couldn't solve his problem, but it weighed on her emotionally. She couldn't help his day be better so that he could engage in the learning. And so therefore, she struggled all day. And if you compound those, lots of kids have bad days, right? If you compound that over the period of a week, a month, a whole school year, imagine the emotional and psychological weight that teachers carry when they can't solve every problem for all 30 kids in front of them. Mm-hmm. In the team teaching model, now this year, she said, I know the adult who is his person. I know the adult who has a 90% success rate and making him feel better and get him back in his, you know, back in his seat, ready to engage in learning in under an hour. And so not only is that kid's learning experience better, but she also doesn't carry that psychological weight that so many teachers carry in our state.
We're currently with Jack Elsey, the CEO from the Michigan Educator Workforce Initiative, and joining him is Dr. Monica McLeod, Chief Academic Officer from the Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences. So, Dr. McLeod, given Jack painted a really nice picture of how this team teaching works, could you, in your experience, share a specific or measurable outcome or success story from the pilots at the schools like Concord Community and your academy?
I'm happy to, Bob. I'll piggyback a little bit on what Jack just shared about the anecdotal perception data for our teachers. So Jack mentioned the strategic staffing and teaming makes it possible for teaching to be more enjoyable and more effective. And we are hearing that loud and clear from all of our instructional staff involved in strategic teaming. But most importantly, we have seen gains in our student outcomes. So we take the iReady diagnostic assessment 3 times a year to measure growth and proficiency. And last year, our 2 teaming grades, kindergarten and second grade, our kindergarten students moved from 3% proficient at the beginning of the year to 78% on grade level by the end of the year.
Wow.
And second grade also grew from 15% at the beginning of the year proficient in reading to 42% by the end of the year. So these coupled with teachers' effectiveness and enjoying and managing the profession and growing together led to dramatic outcomes, the kind of outcomes we haven't seen in a few years for our scholars.
Those two statistics, the use of the word dramatic is a bit of an undersell of it, given what we know in the business of trying to improve achievement. Well, I need to take a short break. I want to hear from our sponsors. Well, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about how you help prepare teachers and some of the coaching things that you mentioned. So if you'll stay with us, this is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
We're back here on School Talks chatting with Jack Elsey, the CEO of the Michigan Workforce Initiative, and Dr. Monica McLeod, Chief Academic Officer from the Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences. Before the break, we were talking about the structure and benefits of the team teaching model and how it provides so much variety and opportunity for both students and staff. And Jack, let me ask, what forms of support resources or funding does the Workforce Initiative offer to schools if they're interested in implementing something like this?
Yeah, it's a great question. And let me just say at the outset, first and foremost, support aside, the kind of results that Dr. McLeod talked about before the break happen because of really strong leadership at the school level. And so Dr. McLeod is you know, should take the lion's share of the credit, and she and her staff and their commitment to this model. But to support great people like Dr. McLeod and her educators, we support Arizona State's team of experts. They work with schools and teacher teams to develop new habits and skills, going from that classroom of, you know, one teacher for 30 kids to four teachers for, you know, 120 kids or something like that is a big transition for a lot of educators who have come up under one model. Certainly, it's been the model in our country for the last 70 plus years. We also offer direct-to-school stipends to support professional development and learning. And in some cases, schools are literally modifying their classroom environment with furniture, putting a door in between classrooms to facilitate that dynamic grouping throughout the day. And we also cover the costs of those things.
From a teacher training perspective, to help teachers get ready to do this kind of work, how has professional development, or I think you do some type of in-class coaching, how has that influenced the ability to adapt and sustain this process?
Much to the dismay or disappointment of our teachers, we haven't yet torn out any walls or put in any extra doors using our funding from Michigan Education Workforce Initiative, although we have purchased some dynamic seating arrangements and other furniture to facilitate it. But our partnership with Michigan Education Workforce Initiative and the teaming teachers at Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences, we have received intensive coaching and topics that are specific to teaming, such as strong team norms, various models for co-teaching, and the strategies for dynamic student grouping. So we have strong instructional coaches at DAS already. We have strong leadership systems, but the additional professional development for our leaders as well as our teachers has helped us better implement strategic staffing and teaming and made us better positioned to extend that to the additional grades that are taking on teaming this school year.
And Bob, one of the foundational things we do before any school commits is take them to Arizona to see what this looks like in action with teachers who have been teaming in some cases for a number of years. We are deep believers that if you haven't had the opportunity to see it live in action, you're going to have a hard time turning that around and implementing it in your own school. So that's a bedrock of everything that we do.
One thing that is unique about this in reading up on this and preparing for this interview, the notion of team teaching has been around for a while, but very often it was more like turn teaching, where there's two teachers in a room with the same kids and, you know, you're the reading person. It rarely involved moving students based on the relationships with staff and so on. And when I think about why teachers may have been resistant to this over time, there's a big factor developing in education, I think, and that is the impact of technology and God forbid we even mention the word artificial intelligence. What's happening that I think lends itself to this model is for years, maybe even centuries, teachers were the masters of information. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in eighth grade, I was the coolest kid at the party on Friday night because I knew all the 50 state capitals, right? Hey, right here, right? You go around and say, what do you mean you don't know Augusta's the capital of Maine? Like, right? And that was a premium back then. Well, now with so much technology, it's not about being a master of it. It's being a master with it. A master with information, and the way this model is moving students based on relationships and the use of staff makes a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. So, Monica, let me follow up. What examples have you seen of schools customizing this model to meet the likely diverse needs of students in different groups and even different communities?
I appreciate you calling out the difference just from single teacher knowledge transfer model, mm-hmm. which may or may not have ever been successful, but it was the one we've done for decades, to a more process shared facilitation. And I'll add an anecdote. two things have happened last year in the teaming model. One, our kindergarten students became wildly adept at transitions, right? Everybody thinks the one teacher, one classroom model best supports, especially a younger learner. But we have an example. We have a video of one of our second grade scholars saying, my first teacher is Miss Watson. My second teacher is Miss Broyles. My third teacher is Miss Solomon, and so on. And that process, integrity, strength, flexibility within students, which isn't measured in any of our iReady data or other proficiency data, is one of the things that leads to process. I'll say what happened strategically in the teaming model at Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences this year is the teachers grouped students instead of five teachers with their own groups of scholars. Often, they moved those five homerooms into larger groups, three larger groups with two educators in the room at the same time. But that changed throughout the course of the year based on what students' needs and teachers' needs evidenced. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest structural change has been the dynamic grouping of students for small group instruction. So all hands on deck, all teachers, our interventionists, our reading specialists, and those groups of students change every day based on what students need. And that's a real disruption to that previous model, but a very positive disruption for outcomes for students.
An additional thought on that, when I think about students that when I was a teacher, you might be a month or so into a semester and it's just not working for them. Well, in typical high school schedules, you're sort of stuck there until the semester break, if you want to try to change teachers, or which wasn't always honored. So once you're in it, you know, you get what you get. Whereas in this case, the flexibility makes a ton of sense. I'm interested in following this and learning more about it. So, Jack, one final thought. Looking forward, what long-term changes do you hope to see in Michigan's educator workforce, and especially as it relates to student outcomes?
Well, in the schools that are adopting this model right now, we are seeing teachers be reinvigorated professionally. We're seeing them recommit to a longer-term vision for their jobs. They've stopped saying, well, maybe one more year, and they've said, I could see myself here for 5 years, 10 years maybe. Ultimately, if we're going to improve public education in our state, we need our best and brightest teachers to stay for longer. And that may not mean a 30-year career for everybody, but it certainly should be longer than 2 or 3 years, which is the average for new teachers mm-hmm. right now. We're seeing that change right now. We hope it happens at a larger scale over time.
Jack Elsey, the Chief Executive Officer from the Michigan Workforce Initiative, and Dr. Monica McLeod from the Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences, thanks for a great chat today. Really eye-opening to the prospect of reinvigorating the profession. I appreciate you joining us on School Talks, and as always, keep up the good work.
It was lovely to be with you today, Bob. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Right after a word from our sponsors, we'll chat with Kyle Luft from the Michigan Connections Academy. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now in the program is Kyle Luft, the Executive Director and District Superintendent for Michigan Connections Academy. Welcome to the program, Kyle.
Thanks for having me.
So in preparation for this interview, I did a little bit of reading and background on your school, and I was intrigued by your commitment to personalized learning. And I'm curious how you at the school use data-driven decision-making to personalize learning for students. And can you give us an example of how that works?
Yeah, years ago we attended a Solution Tree professional learning conference, a professional learning community conference, and one of the key takeaways from that is to personalize the learning experience for each student. So we've spent the last several years identifying the standards that are most essential for each grade level in each course, and then designing rigor-matched assessments that connect to those standards, and our instructional model is directly aligned to supporting individual students based off of their performance on those skills. Mm-hmm. So every everything we do is aligned to what a student performance looks like and getting them to the exact performance that we would feel necessary based off of state assessments and rigor-matched assessments that they're working on in their curriculum.
So by example, given the diverse needs of your student population, what might a strategy look like to address a particular standard or maybe some targeted intervention for a student who needs it? Any thought on what kinds of strategies you implement?
Yeah, so when we take a look at the data that's available on the essential standard assessments for each student, teachers are able to review how a student is performing on a specific skill and then tailor their programming to match what that student needs instructionally and then able to align that to how they are as a person, right? So the Connections Academy is foundational in building relationships with students and knowing what makes each individual student tick. So we're able to combine student performance and where they are on the most essential skills for each one of their courses and then design a plan that makes the most sense for that particular student's interests or the type of learning that they're most comfortable with. And we can design a really tailored, personalized learning plan for each student that we have.
You know, one thing I read about you is you describe your team as unapologetically collaborative. Tell us what you mean by that.
So Michigan Connections Academy started in the 2010-2011 school year, which was the first year that virtual schools were allowed to operate in the state of Michigan. So there weren't experts to rely on, although Pearson Virtual Schools were in other states. There was no model to follow. So in order for us to be successful, we had to use the expertise that we had within our own building. And we've just taken that to every other partnership that we have an opportunity to work with. So Ferris State University is our authorizer, and they've been a tremendous thought partner. It was a big deal for them to sponsor the first virtual school in the state of Michigan. And they took a chance on us, and we've been able to collaborate with them on a really high level. We're part of the Ingham ISD as our school building's located in Okemos, Michigan, and they've been amazing as well at understanding the unique needs of a virtual school and then tailoring all of our instructional model to what that looks like. And then internally, we've done a really great job in adopting the professional learning community model where collaboration is at the forefront of everything you do. So we like to take all of the things that individual people are doing at a high level and their greatness and compound that with what other people are doing at their individual needs as a school so that we're able to truly work together and bring everybody's expertise along to best support students.
We're currently chatting with Kyle Luff, the Executive Director and District Superintendent of Michigan Connections Academy over in Okemos, Michigan. Kyle, I'm sure you know well, this industry, education as a whole, has had a difficult time retaining staff. And I understand that your school has a pretty high retention rate for teachers who stay with you and in the profession. What do you think are factors you have implemented there that contribute to them staying with you, especially from the long-term satisfaction perspective?
Yeah, we're really proud of the environment that we have at Michigan Connections Academy, and staff members are integral in forming the school that we are. So all of our decisions come back to what's best for students, and I think that creates a really great environment for staff members to not only have a say, but then create an environment that's best for each of the learners. We talked a little bit about the personalized learning experience for each student, and the same is true for the personalized learning experience or the environment that we're creating on the professional side of things. So we have a guiding coalition and we have a number of committees that are formed so teachers can choose the path that they feel most passionate about to support our school and the decision making for what is best for kids. And I think that really leads to a great environment for staff members feeling part of a school and then building the model that we have created so far.
Mm-hmm. One of School Talk's primary sponsors is Must Construction Careers, which is an organization focused on providing apprenticeship opportunities across a number of trades for students coming out of school or even adults who might want to change careers. What kinds of things are you doing through your school to expand career and technical education?
Yeah, what an awesome way to connect students to what their plans are for post-secondary, right? So that's sounds like a great partnership that you just referenced. And we have something similar with the CAPS Network where we partner students that are 16 years of age or older with industry leaders so that they can have an internship, a virtual internship with different companies across the country. They have an opportunity to work in an environment that they most like to participate in after they graduate high school. We also have an opportunity to partner with Coursera. So Pearson Virtual Schools have a partnership with Coursera. So students have an opportunity to get into an experience that they think they might be interested in without having to spend money on courses in college, where they can experience marketing, or they can get into the health field, or they can look into administrative tasks and see what makes the most sense for their own environment. Of course, we offer dual enrollment classes as well for students so that they can participate in whatever they have the most interest in. I think that we're hoping to build that out in the future to provide CTE credit and things, but right now we're able to gather some initial data on supporting kids where they are and what their career paths might look like. And then we'll be able to build out a more comprehensive CTE program in the future.
And I can tell you, just based on your enthusiasm, your school mantra, change your best, really fits the kinds of things you're describing, along with you have a pretty robust esports program and really are forward-looking as a school. And I appreciate your time joining us on School Talks, and as always, keep up the great work.
Thanks for your time.
After a short break, we'll chat with Teresa Woods from the Michigan Connections Academy. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Teresa Woods, the Executive Director and District Superintendent for Lighthouse Connections Academy in Southfield. Welcome to the program, Teresa.
Thank you.
I appreciate you stopping by School Talk. So I think a neat place for us to start for our listeners would be helping them understand a school like yours, which is a public charter cyber school, how that sort of operates and how it differs from a traditional public school.
Well, I think one of the great things about a public charter cyber school is that we offer all the same supports, the supports for our students, the certification requirements, just as any traditional brick and mortar. The special thing about us is obviously kiddos can kind of start their days in their PJs if they like, and there's no drop-off lanes in the morning for parents.
And what inspired the creation of this academy, and what do you think makes the school unique from other schools in Michigan?
I think, well, Lighthouse is a part of the Pearson Schools, Connection Schools family. So we were really created in Michigan to really meet the needs of our students. We have other sister schools in Michigan, and there was just such a great need, and Pearson decided that, you know, we'll take a stab at another one, and our authorizer being in Oakland County, so we're partnering with Oxford Schools.
Mm-hmm. You know, during the pandemic, many schools struggled with maintaining high standards and expectations for kids as they were trying to learn from home. It sort of disrupted that model. And I'm curious how a school like yours, given you mentioned starting school in their PJs or pajamas, how do you balance that flexibility of learning online but maintaining those strong academic standards?
Well, one of the things with Lighthouse is that as a public charter cyber school is that we've been in this space for many years prior to the pandemic. So having students learn virtually was something that we've done for many, many years. So it was kind of second nature for us, making sure with our policies and procedures and all the ways that we execute the learning day has always been that of one of rigorous academics, high standards, but also the flexibility that parents have. I think one of the neat things is that our parents also get a lot of involvement. They're able to become the child's a caregiver for learning, and what they do is they're able to preview the curriculum in advance. They're able to really get involved in that learning. So I think that's one of the things that separates us and allows us to really focus in on high academic standards.
So given you're not the typical brick and mortar school where children come to and from every day, how do you engage students outside of their homes, and what kinds of opportunities do you provide them for social interaction or maybe even community involvement?
Well, we have a robust engagement policy that our entire district really focuses in on. We offer monthly opportunities for families to engage face-to-face with their teachers, with their students, in forms of, like, today, for instance, our students are attending field trips around the state at the zoo. So they're all getting together in their different geographical areas around the state of Michigan, and they're going to the zoo with our staff supervision. We have opportunities called learning labs where students come in to different libraries and they meet, and then they're actually studying and working on things that might be giving them trouble. Together, we have in-person graduation, we have prom, we have a host of opportunities. In November, we also do a give back, so our students and our staff are going around the state, and we're working at food banks and doing all the things that in terms of giving back to the community, really doing that community involvement.
Mm-hmm. We're currently chatting with Teresa Woods, the Executive Director and District Superintendent for Lighthouse Connections Academy, which is based in Southfield. You know, Teresa, given the opportunities you have shared with us for students, can you give us an example of a meaningful success story that you think embodies what Lighthouse is all about?
I think one of our success stories is that we have a lot of students who didn't have opportunities to attend school face-to-face in a brick and mortar. And then we had a student who from the time that, you know, he could walk, he was very focused in on going to school. But he had a rare form of cancer that didn't allow him to attend school face-to-face. And he just wanted to attend school. And finally, the family found us. And it was the highlight of his life, going to school, being with the teachers and his classmates virtually. And even during his final days when he was in the hospital, he was still engaging with our students and our staff in a very meaningful way. And one of the successes is that the mom, upon his passing, he was 8 years old, she contacted our office and asked if we would provide a Lighthouse Connections Academy t-shirt for the family to wear and have pictures at his services, because that's how meaningful education was to her son and to their family. And as heart-wrenching as that story is, it's our why. It's our why. That was his goal. That was his dream, is to be a student. And Lighthouse provided him and his family that opportunity, even those for those short 8 years.
Such a unique use of an online school, as opposed to what people may think they're all about in terms of someone like him not being able to attend. You know, given the focus online, what kinds of technology and support resources do you provide students to be successful in the school?
Well, we provide a plethora of supports. We provide internet services for them if they so need it. We have a one-to-one devices, so all of our students have devices. We have tech support for our students, and at each of our face-to-face meetings, we also have a tech time where if families are coming to the zoo but they're still having some trouble with their device, they can bring that with them, and we have someone there that's going to be able to assist them with that. So we try to provide whatever the students needs in terms of, you know, technology to make sure that they're successful.
One final thought. How do you see cyber schools like Lighthouse shaping the future of education in Michigan, given the accelerated pace of technology?
I think Lighthouse is really, and Pearson Connection Academy schools are really on the have been in this space for so long. We are the leaders in cyber education. And so we're really actively and aggressively working to figure out and make sure that we can incorporate all the things with AI and the things that really are driving our students. We're also looking at ways to make sure that our students are ready for all those future initiatives, whether it's trade or a traditional college. So I think Lighthouse has really been a pillar and a model for other cyber schools to really look at. And, you know, we're the beacon as the Lighthouse for students in that educational cyberspace in the state of Michigan.
Teresa Woods, the executive director and district superintendent for Lighthouse Connections Academy in Southfield, thanks so much for stopping by School Talks and giving us a neat perspective on a way for children to attend school in what could still be viewed as a non-traditional way, but certainly a laudable one at that. So thanks for joining us and keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
I'd like to thank our guests who joined us on the program today, the Chief Executive Officer of Michigan Workforce Development Initiative, Jack Elsie, Dr. Monica McLeod from the Detroit Academy of Arts and Sciences. We also chatted with Kyle Luft from the Michigan Connections Academy, and Teresa Woods from the Lighthouse Connections Academy. One thing I appreciated about our guests today was their commitment in trying to help people. Probably one of the most fundamental common denominators, whether it's the workforce stuff that we talked with Jack and Monica about, or the innovation that they're trying to do in the academies. As we close out the program today, I'd like to give you something to think about as it relates to the term workforce development. It's not really just about jobs. It's actually about preparing people, especially students, to thrive in a changing world. In fact, a greater number of jobs that our current students will have in the future have not even been created yet. Think of that. What our students are preparing for now are jobs that aren't even here yet. And giving students an opportunity through workforce development means giving them more than academic knowledge. It means teaching them problem solving, adaptability, and the technical skills that employers and communities urgently need. When young people see their clear pathways in front of them, from the classroom to the career, they also see hope and opportunity. If you know a young person who has a vision for their future, you probably know what I'm talking about. However, the importance of workforce development extends beyond schools. It affects the health of our entire society. A strong workforce means stronger local economies, healthier families, and communities where people can build stable lives. It also means we're preparing for the jobs of the future in industries like technology, healthcare, green energy, and the skilled trades, so we don't fall behind as the world continues to change. And at its core, workforce development is about dignity and purpose. It ensures that people from every background, whether they're students, career changers, or adults re-entering the workforce, have the tools they need to succeed. When we invest in workforce development, we're investing in people, in equality of opportunity, and in the future strength of our society. That's why it must remain a priority, not just in education, but in every part of the community. And we'll continue to do our part on School Talks to bring this important concept to you as often as we can. And that's all the time we have for today. But remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.